It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
All coaches aspire to be champions, and this time of year is when you set that vision for your team. By now, listeners of this podcast know about Signature Championship rings and have met some of the Signature Champion coaches who partner with them to celebrate their achievements. Reputable, affordable, first-class customer service are just some of the ways we keep hearing coaches describe Signature Championship rings. So as you're ramping up this summer for the upcoming season, create a championship vision for your team now using the design tool at signaturechampions.com/podcast. Give your team a visual to motivate their pursuit of a championship in 2024. And when your team has a championship moment to celebrate, we highly recommend consulting with Signature Championship Rings.
Lawrence First and Goal is a nonprofit organization, a labor of love, started in 2004 by John and Marianne Luce in honor of their daughter, Lauren, a pediatric brain tumor survivor. Since its inception, LFG has raised more than $2.87 million toward its mission to provide financial support for brain tumor research and cancer services, to offer financial and emotional support to families living with pediatric cancer, and to increase awareness of the disease. The success of Lawrence First and Goal in its fight against pediatric cancer depends on the generosity of people just like you. Any gift can make a difference to a child who is living with illness. Connect with LFG on our social media channels. See what we're up to, follow our newest initiatives, and learn what you can do to help. Share with your friends. LFG has partnered with CoachTube to create a library of coaching clinics covering all aspects of football play, strength and conditioning, and coaching philosophy. Proceeds from purchased courses benefit the missions of LFG. Finally, Lawrence First and Goal has published some inspiring books to support the LFG mission. You can purchase the LFG publications, Hope is Here to Stay, Lauren's Life Lessons, and the Manual of Football Drills and Skills, or Home Fields by Bill George. And proceeds will help fund research, cancer services, and family support. You can get your books on Amazon.com today.
All right, guys. Well, we're here for our second session of our spring series with Lawrence First and Goal. And we're excited tonight to be joined by the head coach of Kansas, Lance Leipold. Coach Leipold, we appreciate you taking
time.
The time
is very valuable. And I thought, okay, I got to make a decision on, is it about my ego or is it about letting these guys do a job?
Welcome to a special episode of Coaching Coordinator presented by Lawrence First and Goal Foundation, featuring an insightful conversation with Coach Lance Leipold, the head coach of the Kansas Jayhawks. Coach Leipold shares his remarkable journey in coaching from his early days at Wisconsin Whitewater to his current role as the head coach at Kansas. We discuss the challenges he faced, the strategies he implemented, and the successes he achieved along the way. Get ready to gain some valuable insights into building a winning culture, overcoming obstacles, and maintaining focus on continuous improvement. You'll definitely enjoy the inspiring stories and wisdom shared by Coach Leipold in this episode. To get the video of the conversation, go to CoachTube and add it to your professional development library for free. The link is in the show notes. Stay tuned for Winning Edge takeaways following the interview. What you see on tape is a direct reflection of what you teach and how you teach. Video is important, but if you don't teach well, you're not going to like what you see on your video. First Down Playbook has been helping coaches teach better for 13 years. It allows you to present installs, playbooks, and practice cards in half the time with NFL quality. Coaching tools like video pairing, A player app, practice schedules, and wristband sheets have made First Down Playbook a program management system with everything in one place. If you're in a position of leadership with your football program, receive a free one-week look at First Down Playbook. Call them at 512-814-6158 or visit them on their website or social media. Mention Coach and Coordinator Podcast or use the coupon code COACH24 to receive a $100 discount off the normal $700 First Down Playbook team membership price. Links and the phone number are in the show notes. This obviously is always a great cause, and we appreciate you contributing to it.
Thanks, Keith. I appreciate it. And John, I appreciate the opportunity. I know through our time at the University at Buffalo, Rob Iannello, who's been with me since our days there, is our general manager here at Kansas now, and he's with me. But he has always reaffirmed what a great cause this is, an event through the camps and everything. And I'm just flattered that I have the opportunity to help here tonight.
Well, hey, thanks, Coach, for doing this. I know you're really busy. I know you've got a lot going on there, but you know, we're honored to have you. I mean, you've done a great job everywhere you've been, and I've been a big fan. Met you a long time ago. But yeah, your staff were huge in helping us out. We had, 2,000 campers, you know, every year, and you guys were great. And then when COVID came, you know, Keith Grabowski here, and it was Keith's brainchild to do all this. And the clinic has been huge. I mean, it really has. So we appreciate you having you on live in the middle of the week. And I'm hoping, I know a lot of people are going to get a lot out of it, but thanks a ton.
Again, my pleasure. Thanks.
Coach, we'll get right into it. And, you know, I'm always interested in the start, you know, someone's start in coaching. And I know yours did not happen immediately. You know, read a little bit about what you were doing before you got into coaching and really how that became, I guess, a calling for you. We'd love to hear just a little bit about the why behind getting into this profession.
Well, I'll try to give you the Cliff Note version. I went to Wisconsin Whitewater, you know, where I was fortunate to, you know, to have great mentors and play. Grew up 15 miles away. My dad was a high school basketball coach. My dad played at basketball Whitewater. But, you know, I graduated with a sociology degree. And I kind of jokingly say, Keith, that, you know, in the old days, you go look in the newspaper, there wasn't a lot of jobs for sociologists. So you had to figure out something else to do, you know. And I started working some summer camps and doing things. But I was looking to get involved in law enforcement. And so I did some part-time things there. But as I was doing it, I had a chance to kind of do some part-time coaching down at Whitewater, kind of helping out. But then as I was getting into the law enforcement thing, I was doing a lot of third shift work. And I sat there one day and said, I thought I went to college not to work third shift. And I went and got an application to graduate school at Whitewater and started there. And wasn't that long after that, made an NAIA stop out at Doane College in Nebraska. But in 1991 in the spring, and kind of shortly after is where I met Rob Iannello there, but at the state clinic in Madison, Wisconsin, I had a chance to meet Barry Alvarez. And I got introduced by some people and had a chance then to apply and was fortunate to get hired after Barry's first year there after a 1-10 season, and had a chance to spend 3 years as a grad assistant, and then went on to Division II Nebraska Omaha from there, and then kind of trickled through. But yeah, there was kind of some late nights of, I worked at a delinquent home for boys and worked in my hometown in a squad car, kind of doing the Barney Fife deal or something. But actually the calling came, and you know, it was never looked back from there.
I know early on too, you definitely proved you weren't afraid to work, that you jumped into a lot of things. And I think, you know, that's important to make it in this profession, isn't to sit around and wait for all the great stuff that you have to do, that it's jumping in and learning how to do everything and being there to provide value as you can, especially as a young coach learning the game.
Yeah, I think the one thing, there's a lot of different philosophies that can happen today in coaching, and being a small college player, I have great value for it and where it's at. Like I said, I went to Doane College. I was the head dorm. I ran a dorm. I did intramurals, and I was coaching quarterbacks and receivers at like 24 years old. And remember the first game I'd asked one of the assistants, I said, what, it was a small kind of high school looking press box. I said, where are we on the, what side of the press box are we on? He said, we're on the top. And I said, what do you mean? He goes, yeah, we sit on chairs up there. So the first game I had to carry a folding chair up a ladder. And you know, it kind of makes you, you know, you think you're coaching college football. And, you know, there's just things like that that you got to learn to do and appreciate. And I think my path has been unconventional maybe to this point, but I do think some of the things that in my time that allowed me to see the big picture and appreciate a lot of different things. And one of the coaches that I worked under at Wisconsin, Jim Huber, he was one that always told me, just get a room. Find a way to get your room and have a chance to run it. Sometimes I think we have people here as well in off-field roles, but if you don't have a chance to always take charge and learn and grow, sometimes you get stymied and pigeonholed. So I think there's a lot of ways to do that. And after 7 years at Division II Nebraska Omaha, then I had a chance to join Frank Solich's staff in an off-field role that I really, though I didn't enjoy all the duties of that job, I think those 3 years off the field at a program of that nature and where they were at that time, we had a chance to play for the BCS National Championship against Miami. Things weren't going very well towards late in that season. But it gave me a great perspective of everything in a large football program. I was being able to observe more of operations, more of what the video staff and some other things that I don't think I ever would have had the time to really watch and appreciate or and inform my own philosophies that allowed me later in life to get that. But after Coach Solich was fired after winning 9 games, I just had made a family decision with my wife that I wanted to get back on the field. I was going to look to be a lower level head coach at the Division II or Division III level and just have a little more control of my life. So we did that. I took my old job back at Omaha, commuted from Lincoln, Nebraska to Omaha. We did not move the family. And I stayed there for 3 seasons until the great opportunity to return to my alma mater in 2007 to be the head coach. And never did I think when I took that job that I would have the opportunity that I have to this day. I thought maybe I'd be at Whitewater for 20 years or maybe have a chance to return to a place like Omaha. But Division I coaching and those things were, was never really in the plans at that time.
Well, Whitewater, you were able to take a program that was having success and just bring it to another level. I've been on the other side of Mount Union. I know how difficult a mountain that is to climb. You did it. You guys beat them and more than once in won national championships, and that created a lot of opportunity. But I think for you, everywhere you've been, there's been a vision you've had. How has that vision come together for you? Just looking back at the beginning of what you did at Whitewater, you know, the vision for the program then.
Yeah, Keith, it's kind of interesting because I could think back and, you know, when I first got into coaching and I kind of skipped a little bit there. I returned to Whitewater to get my master's degree before I went to Wisconsin. In 1990, Bob Brezowitz, former head coach, had hired me to come back and kind of be the offensive coordinator, even though I was finishing my master's. And I thought about things at that time. Wisconsin lacrosse had a lot of success. Central College in Iowa was doing very well. But I also kind of looked at some of the things at that time about the staffing model that the Wisconsin system had, the ad hoc coaches and what their roles and responsibilities. And I was starting to get some thoughts. And then, because I had done the math in my head. The coach before Bob Brezowitz, I played for 2 years, Forrest Perkins, was a head coach for 28 years. Bob Brezowitz replaced him, coached there for 24 years. I did the math about how old Bob would be when Forrest retired. And I go, you know what? I'll be in my early 40s when that time would come. And I remember Barry Alvarez had become a head coach at 42. So I was like, you know what? I'll be right about 42. And sure enough, I was 42 years old, or it turned 42 right about the time I got the job. But I started to formulate some things that I thought could be some different things in the staffing model and some resource things. And there were some things that had improved at Whitewater that I thought I could hopefully put a stamp on that would help us to maintain momentum. And one of those was carried on to really what I've done all the time is I was never enamored with having to be the play caller once I became a head coach, or I never thought that defined me. And it still doesn't today. And today, with all the things that we have, unfortunately, you get pulled away from more X's and O's than ever before. But I thought the other things about culture, discipline, how we're going to, expectations within the program, it would allow me to be better at what I wanted our program to be. And what I mean is, and I don't know all the different levels of coaches that we have on here tonight, but my thought was this: I can find a lot of people who are passionate about football and scheming and coaching the kids. I don't know if I can find as many people passionate about the other things that really matter to a football program that we don't get to touch ourselves all the time. And I've had to be you can't game plan, run the program, coach the kids, and then keep a good dialogue with your administrators or your booster clubs, in my opinion, and do it all. And that's why I admire high school coaches and coaches at some of the lower levels where you got to still teach classes and do other things as well. There's so many hats. And I thought if I could, I didn't want to be compared as a head coach and a coordinator. I just want to be the darn head coach and do it in a way that I thought could be sustainable. And that's kind of how it all started for me. And I think it's been able to work in different ways.
In looking at that, it's not easy. I've been there, right? Especially as a young coach, you've been the coordinator. Usually that's your opportunity. You did well at that. Now you become the head coach. I think some guys struggle with that and feel, a little bit lost in stepping away. They feel like maybe the game will get away from them. And I know it depends on your situation. I mean, if at the high school level, you can get a bigger staff, you can be the head coach. Division III, same thing. It's not easy to let go. I've known a lot of guys just struggle when they do let go with it of, well, what's beyond the culture? How do I stay involved in the game? So for you, what is your input into all the different aspects of what's going on with the X's and O's and game day and all those kinds of things?
Yeah, I've been able to have some outstanding quarter. You mentioned our time at Whitewater, and we're there 8 seasons. We're fortunate to win 6 national championships. We did it with 3 different offensive coordinators and 1 defensive coordinator, Brian Borman, who's still with us today. Now, I'm in the room on that, but again, and I guess the way to say some of that would be Jim Zabrowski, who's our current quarterback coach and co-offensive coordinator here, was the first offensive coordinator I hired at Whitewater. Actually, he's a Mountain Union grad. He was the head coach at Lakeland College in Wisconsin. And through a conversation of trying to get some other things, start talking with Jim. And he was supposed to be the opening game opponent of my very first game at Whitewater. What we started talking about is trying to get him to move the game back to Whitewater. And we started talking, and I was driving back to Nebraska to see my wife. We talked for over 2 hours. And by the end of the conversation, I started talking to him about being the offensive coordinator. Well, now I'm asking a guy to give up a head coaching job to run the offense. But I also wanted a guy with Division III head coaching experience, because I hadn't been back at the Division III level in 16 years. So I'm trying to get a resource as well that can help me. Well, if I'm going to meddle in what they're doing, I think I'm going to be a distractor. I would try to sit in on both sides of the ball and do those things. The other thing, Keith, and I don't know how it happens for everyone else, but especially when you're, I thought at Whitewater, practice would start our meetings, I don't remember, 1 or 1:30, somewhere between noon and that meeting time, something would hit my desk, usually player related, that was a distraction. Or the same thing happened when I was just, I had a coordinator title. I was doing some of the play calling at Omaha, but Pat Burns, our head coach, is coaching quarterbacks, and he's heavily involved. But every time the phone rang or something happened, our offensive staff meeting stopped. And I remembered that, how frustrating that would be sometimes about efficiency and time. And I knew when I became a head coach that if I was meddling and I got pulled away, I was holding them up. And especially at the Division III level, when you got coaches who are coming from other things or other jobs on campus or something, time is very valuable. And I thought, okay, I got to make a decision on, is it about my ego or is it about letting these guys do a job? So that's kind of where it's always been. And is that the other thing that I've always tried to focus on with other things is how can I continually make our program better? And a lot of times at the smaller levels, I felt your boosters and anybody that really wants to help you, they get more excited about helping you during the season than they do maybe in May when you've got a little extra time. So you got to hit them at the right time. And where do you find the time for that? So those were things where you can try to share your vision and do some other things, and that eats up a little time. So that's kind of how I've done it. Game day, I'm still involved with, are we going forward, punting, you know, all that kind of stuff. I've kind of got an opinion on run or pass, but at the same time, you know, I'm switching on both sides of the headsets. I'm talking more about some certain things, but at the same time, I think, I hope, if you had some of the people on, whether it be Jim Zabrowski or Andy Kolnicki, who's now moved on to Penn State, or you know, and they've been the main guys through the years, that they would feel that they've been given the coaching latitude to do their jobs. And I feel that's important.
As coaches, we know that some of the biggest hurdles to our team's success can come from off the field. Your team needs support to tackle the endless list of expenses, uniforms, training equipment, travel, and more. But raising that money can feel like a full-time job. Thankfully, there's Vertical Raise. Vertical Raise is the premier online fundraising platform using innovative technology to create the easiest and most efficient system available. Raise more money in less time with a local fundraising coach who works with your team every step of the way to customize the ideal fundraiser. With options for online donations, digital discount cards, premium product sales, and even spirit shops, Vertical Raise has top-of-the-line solutions for every fundraising style. To find out more, visit verticalraise.com and we'll get you connected with an exclusive offer on your first fundraiser. I've always been interested in the use of technology to make our jobs more effective, so I'm excited to continue sharing modern football technology with you here on the podcast. This innovative system leverages tendencies to improve self-scouting, game planning, and in-game decision-making at the speed of the game. Modern football stands out because it's a battle-tested platform used by teams at all levels, like four-time national champion Bishop Gorman, the five-time California State champion Folsom Bulldogs, six-time Texas State champion Lake Travis, Cal football, and the CFL's Grey Cup champions, the Montreal Alouettes. So book a demo today to see why these teams trust modern football technology. Visit www.teammofo.com/demo and mention Coaching Coordinator Podcast or use the coupon code CC10 to receive 10% off your first year.
When you look at early on in a coach's career, especially, you know, think of the high school level, I think it's true at the small college level. Your first head coaching job, probably in moving into that, is not going to be necessarily one that everybody wanted and that is doing well, that you have to build. And a lot of times it's building from the ground up. And I think, you know, you had that experience in what you guys were able to do at Buffalo. It was a program in need of a vision and need of a lot of building. And you guys were able to turn it around in a pretty short period of time to do some amazing things there. What recommendations do you have for a guy going into that situation, regardless of the level, something where you do have to really go in and build that thing from the ground up?
Yeah, that's a great question. And make sure I get back to that. So I want to just share two other really quick things. I mentioned about being at Wisconsin after the 1-10 season. The next year, my first year there, and Rob was there, we were 5-6, and then we were 10-1-1 and won the Big Ten and won the Rose Bowl. In 1994, I went to Nebraska, Omaha. We were 1-10, 3-8, 10-2, and made the Division II playoffs. Being, of course, when you're more full-time, you have a little more hands in it. But those times of my coaching career were some of my most rewarding. And so, getting the Whitewater, and they had played at a high level the couple years before, and then getting it over the hump and sustaining, though enjoyable, was also a grind. And I looked at back, and when I looked at some of the things, if I was ever going to leave Whitewater, I wanted to build one from more that was a little more bottomed out, so to say. So that was, I wanted to prove it to myself, and I don't know who anyone else who cared, maybe, but I wanted to try to do that. And of course, it's not many times that as a Division III coach that you get a call from a Division I athletic director asking you if you're interested in the job. So, you know, opportunity was knocking in a certain way. So we looked at that. I mentioned Rob multiple times, who's on here, but I'll never forget. So Rob's been in Alabama. He'd been at Kansas, Wisconsin, Notre Dame, Arizona. And when I interviewed, I needed to have someone that was going to be able to be a right-hand man, help me make the jump in the recruiting philosophies and all the things. So that was very important. And as the interview process was, I kind of tried to, you know, talk about if I could convince Rob to be part of the staff, but at the same time, bring the people of the other part that was with us to do it culturally the way we wanted to. And I thought that was very important. So, you know, going in on that, it was challenging. And then, you know, here you are in Wisconsin and you think, and somebody had asked me, like, Northern Illinois opens and you're not even under consideration. You can't get a consideration when Western Michigan opens or anything else. For a guy who'd never really ever been in the state of New York, you get the furthest east job in the MAC and you got to go into some other areas to prove yourself. But the thing that I think for all people is being yourself and being genuine and going through it, because the question was, well, how are you going to recruit out east and you don't have a staff that can do that? I said, I think I've got some real quality coaches and men who are going to be thorough and genuine and be good with high school coaches. And I think we're able to slowly develop those type of things. But I can remember, and I'll share this story, and Rob and I still chuckle about it, is in the meantime, I accepted the job, but flew back and forth as we continued our season at Whitewater. They let me finish the playoffs where we were able to finish that last title. And Rob would fly in and hadn't fully accepted the job. I would fly out Monday morning. I'd fly out early Sunday, right after our playoff game. And I'd stay till Tuesday morning and grab the first flight out. And the staff was already doing things. And I'm trying to work both jobs. Rob would fly in Tuesday and leave on Friday to try to hold it together recruiting wise and whatever, the semester had ended. And he called me and he said, "Hey, Lance, did they show you the locker room when you were there to take the job?" And I was like, "You know what? They didn't." And I was like, "Why?" He goes, "I'm just asking." He goes, "Did they show you the weight room?" And I'm like, "Yeah, matter of fact, they didn't." You know, they fly you in, they meet you some people, they have a press conference, and they send you back out. And Rob had been the head coach at Akron. And after they asked about the weight room, I said, "Why?" He goes, "We got a lot of work to do." And so we had work to do on the field, off the field. And, you know, we're very proud about that building process that in our last 4 years, we won the most games in the MAC. We got some facilities done. We got a locker room redone. They got an indoor built. And I think as they finished this weight room project that we had initially started with the plans, it'll be a top two or three facilities in the MAC. And I think that's part of what our philosophy has been with our players. And as a staff, is lead it better than you found it.
In those situations, Buffalo and Kansas, you're coming into programs where you really need to teach guys how to win, right? How to do things that are going to help them win. What are some of the things you focus on first in being able to do that and being able to get these guys to understand this is what it's going to take and get them to believe in the process that you're instilling?
Yeah. You know, Kansas was such a unique thing as well, because again, over a decade of struggling here, it was unique. And again, we're approaching, heck, I think we're within a week of being here 3 years, and 3 years like April 30th or something coming in. And what an odd time to take over a program. You fly into town and they're just walking off the field for their final walkthrough for the spring game. They don't know, you know, a lot of things are going on. Well, I guess in one of the simplest things, Keith, is the standard's got to be the standard. And especially when you're at a place that's coming off an 0-9 season, some other things, you can't compromise too much. Otherwise, you'll never get where you want to be. And what do I mean? But like I just said, we've just finished here, just wrapped up about an hour ago, 110 meetings with players wrapping up spring. Well, upon getting the job of doing the press conference, I started to meet with all the players before they headed out, which was at the time, it was kind of, you know, they're barely meeting you and they're trying to make decisions. And about 2 weeks later, the portal really came into effect and we're scrambling a lot of different ways. But in that time, I had asked the players, what do you think this program needs to do to have a chance to win? And it was really refreshing because the top four answers that we got were, we need more leadership. And I said, from who? And some said the coaches, some said players. And I said, okay, what else? Some said, we need more structure. We need more accountability. We need more discipline. And when they're asking for it, it made us, aha, we got a chance here. Because when we met, when we came back and met, I put those words up on the screen. Okay, these were your top answers. Are you willing to accept it? Are you willing to do that? And then we talked about discipline, and I think somebody came in straggling in a little late. Leave the room. You're late. You don't get to come to the meeting. Okay, sit up. You know, all the things you hear about in these first meetings. The other thing we were able to do, and it probably has to do with more like head coaching, and really when you're talking culture, especially at places like here, there's a lot of things that touch this program that were also maybe part of the problem. And the story I like to share, because I've started sharing this, is that we became a morning practice team at Buffalo. And again, I keep giving Rob the proper credit, because Rob was trying to convince me to do this for a while. And I'm like, you know, like, oh, geez, I don't know if I want to do this morning stuff. You know, it's so different. And well, once we went to it, when we had our indoor in Buffalo, I'd never go back. It's been the best thing for so many reasons. Well, it gave us the right time to give us something new at Kansas as well. But remember, I know I said it was May. So I go to my sport administrator. I said, I want to go to morning practices. And he comes back, well, you know, they say we can do it in January. I said, no, I want to do it for the fall. Oh, we got too many conflicts. I said, okay, give me the list. Well, he comes back, he goes, I'll get them for you. He comes back and, you know, this goes on a little bit. Finally, and I said to him, I said, I don't want to do this, but if we have to practice from 7 a.m. on the field to 9 a.m. and then bring the guys back later for meetings and weights, we're going to do it, but we're going into morning practices. Long story short, after the fifth time, he goes, well, I think we got it down to five guys with conflicts. We got it down to one guy. But if I accept the first answer of we can do it second semester because it's too much work right now, I don't know where we'd be as a program. And that's the thing about changing culture in your program and the people that are associated. If you're convicted about it, you better make sure that you exhaust every option to get something done. Now, why was that important? Because now it was different. And we practiced the way and the length that we told the kids, we're going to get in, we're going to work, we're going to do it. And so when we started to do those things, even though we weren't winning, they saw a difference. When we also held them accountable as much for off-field things as we did on-field things, they're like, ooh, this is different. You know, we had another example. We're talking about holds on for registration. As we all know, everybody has parking tickets. Everybody's got to hold on something at some school. We went through the list. Okay, we do priority registration. We're 4 days in. We have 27 guys that haven't registered, and I'm losing it. And the academic people that handle all this, they're in the room. They're going, why are you upset, coach? We had 89 last year after 4 days. And they thought that was, you know, again, what was the standard? What are we going to do? And I could give you more numbers about missed classes or late for tutoring that we drastically reduced. Fs and withdrawals in our classroom. And really what I think has been part of our success is the holistic accountability has also given our players a sense that I got to be on top of it all the way around. And also when they've seen better success in other ways, I think their on-field confidence has also increased. And really, we haven't had a lot of resistance. The guys have really embraced it. Yes, there's been some that haven't, and of course they move on. But again, we've been very fortunate in player retention because I think they see a standard and a culture that they, once they get used to it, they can embrace.
I think there's, you know, in the story you shared, there's a couple important things I would love to dig into. You know, not accepting that first answer, not accepting something when you know, hey, we need to get this done. And I know as a young coach, sometimes I maybe was a bull in a china shop and not understanding how to finesse some of those situations. But I think it's important because people, especially early on, in a number of different situations where they want to tell you, well, this is the way we do it. And, you know, no, you're not going to be able to do this. I can remember, you know, we were going to pay to play for the first time and, you know, being called in and saying, hey, you know, your roster is going to hurt. Your fundraising is going to hurt. Just want you to know, be aware of it. And we're going to need you to cut a coach too. And, you know, I went back and said, okay, what's your cuts? Where are you making them? I said, I need two more coaches. I'm going to have a bigger roster. You know, but I know, and we did, but I know in doing that in the way I did it, sometimes it did piss some people off, and it's not always the easiest thing to do, especially when you're a young coach. But, you know, I guess some guidance for how do you finesse those situations? How do you stay persistent with it and find those different ways? Like you said, you know, you had all those conflicts, you got it down to one.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if finesse is my best attribute either. You know, but you got to, you know, when you're passionate, you got to, but you got to be able to explain the why, I think, and where do they think the benefit is? And then also, what is the expectation? What do you want from the program? How am I being evaluated? And here's how I think it can help. You know, I'll give you an example at Whitewater, and I'll bring you another one from Buffalo about you're talking about hearing about how things are always been done is, one time at Whitewater, and being a state school, you know, enrollment isn't always as big as maybe the athletic factor of a Division III private school, okay, where athletics is a main portion of enrollment to be driven, right? And it's a little different in those Wisconsin state schools because enrollment's pretty high and it's, you know, it's not financial aid based. It's just, it is what it is. But they wanted to make a push for out-of-state residents, mainly from the state of Illinois, because Whitewater's fairly close to the border. And I came in, I said, okay, let's look for a win-win here. And my athletic director said something. I said, okay, how about if I come up with X amount of money from my camps, if the chancellor will match that, and I can, and we can create two positions, entry level, and they'll recruit the state of Illinois. And if we recruit a player, they probably got a buddy who may come along or a girlfriend. And this will be a win-win. I said, but this isn't going to be just a one-year experiment. I need a two-year commitment so that we can, you know, do it once and learn from and go from there. That was probably my sixth year there, maybe fifth. They're still doing that today. And then you find somebody that can help you with an apartment and all that, and boom, and now you got kind of an entry-level coaching job. But you explain, how does everybody benefit? It can't just be, well, we're football and we need this, okay? That's one thing I think we tried to do. And I think when you're talking about being a bull in a china shop and you're trying to get something done, it's because you're passionate about what you do, and we all are, and I have this fault. But I used to say to my athletic director at Whitewater, and I probably said it to a couple along the way since, and I've said it since I've been here. And that kind of goes back to when I said about not being involved as much with the offense and other things, because here's the thing. If I feel strongly about it, I've got to get to an ignite at this level. You got to go through some layers. I've got to get that passionately said, because I said to my AD at Whitewater, when you go meet with the chancellor, I don't know if the two things I asked for or wanted you to talk about, I don't know if that's number two or three on your list or number nine or 10, or if they even made your list to go talk to. And if it's down the line of items on an agenda to talk to the chancellor, you may not even get the full time to go through it. So how do I know what I want if it's even getting to where it needs to? So you got to keep beating the drum. You got to keep trying if you really want to get it implemented. And sometimes some people don't. Let's face it. You know, I'll throw names out of people and where they influenced me. Bill Callahan, okay, former head coach at Nebraska and Oakland Raiders. He told me one time, hey, Lance, you go in there and talk to him about this, da, 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 da. And he goes, people hate confrontation. They don't like it. And especially when you deal with some of those people and some that have been in other schools and the hours we work in this profession, everything else, and they got a quality of life that they want to do. And it's hard to get people to change. And, you know, you're saying, well, this is the way we've always done it. Okay. I'm kind of into storytelling here a little bit, but we're at Buffalo. We had somebody that worked with us for a while, and in our early times there, we'd get two little sayings. This is the way we've always done it. Or let me give you a little history. That's how he'd say it to us. Let me give you a little history. And finally, after one time, I did some research and I said, I've done some research. He goes, well, let me give you a little history. I said, well, let me give you a little history. I did some research. And since you've been in your position, Buffalo football has won 27% of its games and 37% of its conference games. Let's try it my way once just for giggles. And when you get people to understand that, hey, we're going to try something new, it's tough because also I've found this out in some jobs, and I use the Mac as one because it's viewed as a stair-stepping job, okay? I didn't realize how much administrators even moved on from Mac jobs. I was just, you know, at Whitewater places, you kind of stayed forever. I had 10 of 13 years I was in Omaha, but kind of going through that, you start looking at these things and the people that don't touch your program every day that aren't really part of your circle, I guess, of people that would move on with you, their view in the Mac sometimes is this: you're going to win and move on, or you're going to lose and get fired. Why am I going to change what I'm doing? So that's why it's important to make sure that your standards and your culture, the ones that you are non-negotiable about, really have to be implemented, or you don't have a fighting chance at the ones that aren't ready made or built in that has a lot of tradition and success, in my opinion.
Yeah. Yeah. How necessary is it to work on that person, you know, when you are saying, hey, we're going to try it my way, you know, that administrator, to work for buy-in from that, to get them to see, you know, it's going to work? Because I know, hey, there's a lot of people who, when you say, well, we're not going to do it your way, they get upset and, you know, have maybe the wrong agenda or whatever. I think obviously getting them on the same page, getting some buy-in at least, might be important. How do you go about that?
Yeah. Well, you know, obviously you got to have some tangible things that are showing improvements within your culture. You know, sometimes it can be more off field. You know, it's like for us here, it's even been, you know, we've had record GPAs, you know, winning 9 games this year, but we had the best in-season GPA in program history. So our standard of ways of doing it are working, not just on the field. At Buffalo, I think we're doing some things probably more classroom related as well about standards of where we're going and where we're moving. It was one of those things. It is tough, especially when you take tough jobs, because our time frame sometimes that we're given in these jobs to show that you're making progress, I think what happens sometimes, coaches going with a nice plan and some things aren't happening, they can't get this done and they see it, and then they compromise what that plan is, or they make major adjustments to it, and now it's almost like starting over. So when you get hired, you got to make sure that, you know, you've got that strong relationship, especially at, I think sometimes at these levels, you know, the AD's got to be your partner. You got to, and again, the administrators or other people can't be our opponents. They got to be our adversaries, and we're in it together. And that's kind of like the Whitewater thing about working to find a way to help admissions. I say it a lot at really all the jobs. I don't view us that we got to be more important than anyone. We just need to be a great teammate on campus, but we need them to be great teammates as well. And let's work together. And we all, I'm looking for win-wins. And I think when we can do that, and when you give us these things, like you're saying in your job, whatever, hey, give me some more players, a couple more coaches. A, we're going to get better, but we're going to help enrollment. We're going to help school. And there's going to be other things that people are going to get excited about. And there's a trickle down. And then there's more people in the community and there's more people in town. and then the businesses are there. I mean, we've had it happen here. We had a business owner of a restaurant tell me, you know, in the 22 season when College game day came, he said it, the September of 2022 was the best month of business that he's ever had since he owned it. So when you have those type of things, hopefully, you know, those things are being absorbed and appreciated by all.
It's been incredible to watch what you guys have done at Kansas and, you know, 9-4 last season. Obviously, wherever you're at, the job is never over. The challenges continue. Certainly, when you bring things to a level that people haven't seen before, you know, they get all happy about it, but you always want more. So how do you make sure that, especially inside your doors, you're keeping the team focused on the right things and that, you know, yeah, we had some big wins and defeated some top 10 teams at the time, but there's more that we want to accomplish.
Yeah, you know, no doubt. That's the thing, you know, where at whichever level, wherever you're at, what you're doing, you can't spend a lot of time. And it gets more challenging, I think, because of today with social media and really coverage holistically for guys. And there's other distractions, as we know now in college football at this level. It's you better stop looking in the mirror. You better stop watching the highlights. You need to stay, you know, at a program like we're at here at Kansas right now, quite honestly, as a head coach, I'm trying to balance the most in my mind as we keep moving forward is we need to have confidence. This program hasn't had a lot of confidence. I can look at some of our early times when we were here going in at halftime and just watch the faces of guys when we're down 17. And it's been tough because of what they had gone through. So the confidence that a lot of these young players fought through in our 2-10 season, we're the youngest team in Power 5 football to where we are now. I want that confidence. But balancing confidence with complacency is my biggest, I think, challenge as a head coach going in this year and keeping us motivated, because we now have to understand finishing the season ranked, we are not viewed the same by people anymore than we were 2 years ago. And you're going to get a different focus and a different probably effort and strain than maybe we did, you know, when we were a 2-10 team. So we got to be able to do that. And that's, again, being where your feet are at, I guess, you know, those type of sayings and challenging our guys just like we have before, that our standards are standards and we're going to try to get a little bit better today than we were yesterday. And I think one of those things that we talked about in those tough days and when we had some tough losses and stuff early on, I think when we were new, our players came in and wanted to, they're like, okay, we got blown out. Now what's going to change? No, we told them the practice schedule is the practice schedule. This is what we're doing. This is the expectation. And we're doing that because it works. And when we win, we're doing the same thing because it works. And it's not these great modifications back and forth. So I think our players, once again, by showing that level of consistency, I think our players have embraced that as well. But again, we've talked about, you know, showing up and thriving and not surviving during the toughest times. And you hear a lot, Keith, about, you know, the kids today don't love the game as much. I think we go nonstop with these guys so much, we don't let them really, really love it to come back to do it. You know, we got the NFL draft coming up, what, tomorrow night or something. Those teams that are picking in the first whatever picks, when was the last time that they were in their building around their coaches? First week of January? But we give our guys 4 weeks off and we want to know why they're not loving to be back right after it, you know, and we're talking with a younger group. So I think we got to make sure that as we gear it up, we still have to get them time to focus on other things and then be excited and challenged to go attack it to meet the expectations, especially in our program.
I really appreciate the stories you shared, the insight you shared into your program, into your career, into some of the things you've done. I know John popped back in here. I'm sure he'd like to say a few words as well, but I want to thank you, Coach, for the time you gave us today.
Thanks, Keith.
Hey, thanks again, Coach, for all your help, and not just tonight, but all your support with the staff. I mean, you know, so the people out there know, I mean, it all goes to pediatric brain tumor research and cancer services, and Again, it was Keith Grabowski's idea. He reached out to us. And after the COVID things, we shut down the camp and started the clinics. And you know, we got about 500 clinics out there now that people can purchase some books. We're going to show a video to talk about all of that. But it, you know, there's not many foundations where every nickel raised truly goes to the, you know, the mission of pediatric brain tumor research and cancer services. So it means a lot. You took the, you know, Wednesday night to do this. And I'm sure a lot of people are going to check it out.
I appreciate it, John. Thank you for the opportunity.
Here are winning edge takeaways and ideas for implementation. 1. Always have persistence and conviction. Like Coach Leipold, you should not be afraid to push for what you believe is necessary for your program's success. It's important to stay persistent and explain the reasons behind proposed changes or initiatives to gain buy-in from administrators, staff, and players. 2. Hold the consistency in the standards. Maintaining consistent standards and expectations, whether during tough times or periods of success, is crucial for building a strong program culture. This consistency helps instill confidence in players and keeps them focused on continuous improvement. When you step into situations like Coach Leipold did at Buffalo in Kansas, you have to raise the level of expectations by the application and execution of consistent standards. And 3, balance confidence and complacency. You need to strike a balance between fostering confidence in your players and guarding against complacency. It's essential to challenge the team to keep striving for improvement even after achieving success to prevent a drop-off in performance or motivation. Be sure to continue to support Lawrence First and Goal by utilizing the library of presentations from college and pro coaches to develop yourself professionally. With over 500 courses in the library, essentially any topic you wish to dig into is available. You can find the library on coachtube.com and the link is in the show notes. Follow all we're doing at coachandcoordinator.com and follow us on X at Coach K. Grabowski.